From the KUNV studios in Las Vegas, you're listening to Our Metropolis, a weekly interview program with people who are changing the face of Las Vegas. And now, here is your host.
I am your host, John Katzlamitas. I write the Katz Report for the Las Vegas Sun and LasVegasWeekly.com, and I'm in the print edition of the Sun on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays. Our guest this week is a stand-up comic appearing at the Clarion Hotel Casino in a show entitled Tanya Lee Davis, Little Comedian, Big Laughs. The show opened December 30th and will be staged at the Clarion until the 31st of May. As the title of the show indicates, Tanya Lee is a diminutive person. She's 3'6", making her the smallest performer, we think, in all of Las Vegas. Welcome to our metropolis, Tanya Lee Davis.
Thanks for having me.
I guess that, I don't know if that's been verified, but you would have to be, right?
We got
to
get Guinness on this or something. Come on. I need a title. I need another hook.
Not enough hooks.
Yes, exactly. And in this day and age, it's all about hooks.
Well, that's good. Yeah, you've got one that you're born with.
So yeah, might as well make the most of it. Capitalizing on it. Yeah, I have a form of dwarfism, so please be 3'6", but I pack quite the punch.
You do. Yeah, I can feel it. Now we were talking about this before we came on the air. I've always struggled in writing about how to refer to somebody who is afflicted with dwarfism, who is a small person,
short of stature.
I like the word diminutive.
Afflicted sounds so, you know,
blessed with.
There we go. Yeah, let's cheese it up. Yeah, no.
Even that term I have trouble with. So what is the preferred term?
You know what?
You're the spokesperson for them.
I get people ask me that all the time, and I feel bad because people don't know because I can't even keep up with the terminology. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like changing all the time. Basically, you can't go wrong with little person or a dwarf, or you have, you know, you're a dwarf kind of thing. Now apparently I've heard, well, you're not a dwarf, you're a person with dwarfism. And I'm like, oh, really? Are we going to that?
Dwarfism.
Yeah, are we going to that extreme now? I mean, it's just, you
know, PWD.
Exactly. I can't keep up. So, I mean, I do freely say the word midget on stage, but being a comedian, it kind of gives me creative license, and it's also a better comedy word, and I say it so regularly in my daily life, you know, oh my gosh, that's midgetized, or, you know, and I'm comfortable with the word, but I understand where the pain comes from.
Yeah, well, others who are people of little people, people with dwarfism, PWDs. How do they respond to your comic use of this of your size as a comic tool? How do they like that, or
well,
do they?
I've gotten mixed reviews, but for the most part, quite favorable. It's only those people that will anonymously, you know, send in an email or a blog. Oh, we don't like the way you're representing us. I'm like, who the heck said I was your representative? I didn't get anything in the mail. I didn't get the memo. But because I am who I am and I deal with so much of my life experiences, for the most part, my people, you know, embrace the fact that I am keeping it real and talking about our life and making fun of, you know, not making fun of, but making fun of the situations we get in, and yet making relatable and making my audience see life through my eyes. And I think that my people appreciate that because, you know, I can, right off the bat, I have to make people comfortable. And, you know, I disarm them. And therefore, I think next time they see another little person, they won't be so, you know, reserved, or maybe at that point they'll feel a little bit more comfortable maybe approaching them.
How do you disarm them?
My stand-up, right off the bat, with stand-up, this show that I'm doing at the Clarion is a one-woman show, so it's slightly a different format. With my stand-up, typically, like if I'm headlining, sometimes my audience doesn't know it's me. So I come running up on stage, I usually stand on a chair or some sort of box, and I can hear people just go, oh my gosh, we weren't expecting this, you know, and I kind of go, yeah, that's it, you weren't expecting this. I call them on it, and I'm like, you know, what do I say? You know, let them know that I get it. I know, and I know I'm different. I'm Canadian, you know, kind of threw them for a loop. So, yeah, I think because I'm just right out there and I work my sexy on
stage. You've never seen a redheaded comic before? You can use
yes, there you go.
Something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah,
but the people who come in don't know that you're a person with dwarfism until they see you on stage. That does happen?
Oh, yeah. Many comedy clubs, you know, lazy in this day and age, don't promote that, you know.
So they just come in to see and think they're going to see a comedy show, and it could be anybody, yeah. and it's you.
So with my one-woman show here in Vegas, I mean, my promotion has me life-size basically on the posters. So, and also I have a lovely mural that's been painted for me that is in front of my set, and it's got a gigantic picture, life-size picture of me. So people know what they're getting, and so I feel like I don't need to disarm them as much. They may or may not have seen me, but it's like, you know, there's going to be a dwarf waddling out here at some point, so, you know, it's not as shocking, or they've seen me zipping around the hallway. So I kind of have a different flow. I don't want to kind of ruin it. I have, like, a musical introduction and all this kind of stuff that I deal with. It's kind of fun.
So it's not just a set-up, payoff, joke-telling ritual with your one-woman show?
No, it's a very personal show. It's very fun. Funny, but it's sort of my life journey, sort of being underestimated my entire life. People, you know, they think they see somebody my size and they just go, oh, bless, you know, and they can't imagine themselves in my shoes, when in fact I've traveled all around the world by myself. I've been scuba diving in the Cayman Islands. I've been parasailing. Wow. I've been, you know, I'm a daughter of an airline pilot. I've been all over the world. I've, you know, I've spent 10 months overseas, or 10 trips overseas last year in the UK prior to getting this gig at the Clarion. I'm always, you know, I don't let things hold me back. Mm-hmm. I am, you know, I've done more things than most people, so I like to bring that to the forefront and go, you know what, just because you think you can't handle it, I am embracing the heck out of this, so I'm going for it.
When you were a kid, did you use humor to fend off those who would be, you know, derisive
the
of
evils.
Your physical status? Yeah,
yeah,
you know,
the evils of
children.
Kids can
be pretty ruthless even under any circumstances. I'm sure that in your case, you were a target for a lot of acrimony being made fun of a lot.
I remember as a child, I had a rather large buttocks. It's still quite ginormous. But as a toddler, when I was actually smaller than I am now and my rear end was current size, and my mother used to dress me up in really frilly dresses with lacy underpants. So there, this big booty hanging out. Back then, it wasn't as fashionable as it is now. Darn it, J-Lo didn't exist.
Ample trunks were not yet in
vogue.
Yes,
exactly. Okay. But I embraced it. I'd stand on the air vents at the during recess, doing my best Marilyn Monroe impression. But the boys would still tease me and go, "Tornado, hold on to something heavy," and they'd all grab my ass and. You know, I was like, someday this is going to come in handy. I know it. I'm going to talk about this.
So, yeah, when did you decide to use your gift of comedy and your fondness for comedy as your profession or as your calling?
Well, it's crazy because I actually never aspired to be a comedian. I never had been to a comedy club. I love TV. I love laughing. But I didn't put the two together. I wanted to be an actress. Like, I just knew as a child and as a little girl, I even thought to myself, oh, I'll grow out of this. No pun intended. You know, I'd put my name and a little star on my chalkboard. But growing up, I got involved in kind of theater at school. And I was always, you know, like the Christmas tree in the back of the back of the stage, standing there going, this is my big break.
A lot of method acting.
Yes,
dressed as a shrub.
It's one of the orphans in Oliver Twist. I never got any lead roles up until I started doing children's theater in Winnipeg, where I grew up. And that was while I started university. And I got the lead in the first production. I was Perry the Penguin.
Okay.
And so that was my big break. And I started dating a guy, and he invited me to go see him do comedy. And that was my first time ever in a comedy club.
A local club in Winnipeg?
Yep.
Like a regular comedy club?
Yeah, Yuck Yuck's Comedy Club. And it was 1989. I saw him right at the end of the year, and he was horrible. It was just carnage.
Who's the comic?
His name was, he went by Dash Lalonde. Yeah, he doesn't.
Dash Lalonde.
Yeah, his name is Daryl. It's just
Dash Lalonde.
Yeah, he's a total wanker.
Sounds like a verb.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Needless to say, he's not doing comedy anymore. Yeah.
It sounds like he wasn't doing to comedy then.
No, true that. So I was like, wow, I don't know what, I just instinctively knew what he was doing wrong. Mm-hmm. So I just thought, this is what I want to do. Because when I started university, my parents were like, you have to go to university, get a real job. So I'm like, okay, I'll show you. I'll go to and take theater. And then I realized, oh, you actually have to study theater. I didn't want to study. I just wanted
to perform.
Just wanted
to perform theater.
So when I saw stand-up, I'm like, boom, instantly. You're up there doing it. And that's, like, I can do this.
Either you can or can't. I mean, and you know right now.
Yeah.
What was Dash doing wrong that night? Do you remember?
Oh, his timing was horrible. They told him, you're going to get a light. You have to get off. He was, like, being a rebel. He was, like, going to go over his time.
Oh, man.
He was insulting people that didn't deserve it. I was just like, dude,
you have to obey the light. I know that about comedy.
Yeah, exactly.
He won't be back.
You can't go after people in the audience that it's not warranted. If you don't have the audience on your side, you can't pick on somebody because they'll all turn against you.
Yeah.
And those are your people. You want everybody on board.
And if it's hard to get them back once they do turn on you, right?
If somebody's being a douche or whatever, then and they're acting stupid, then everybody's going to get on board if you slam them down.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look like a rock star. But, he was doing everything wrong, and I was just like, this is... I can do this. I can really
You know,
do
a lot
this.
Of comics, it's funny you mentioned that environment. I'll use this as an example. There are other comics who do this a lot, but Brad Garrett over at Brad Garrett's Comedy Club. The antithesis of you, Brad is 6'8".
I know. I have worked with him.
Yeah, he's a formidable figure anyway. And he walks out on that stage, and I don't know if you've been in his comedy club over at the Tropicana. Mm-hmm. It's got that very low ceiling, and he walks out, and he just towers over the scene, and he picks somebody out of the crowd immediately, usually someone of age. And goes after that person and stays on that person. And often his whole set is just coming back to this person. You know, but was Ben Franklin, was he good in bed? You know, that kind of thing. And how do you, you know, and Brad Garrett has an advantage because he's a person of stature. And, he kind of can convey that aura of someone who might bully around in a comic way. How do you pick on somebody? Or do you in your act? Have you ever done that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, what I do is I really, also because of my size, one thing I work is my sexuality. Like, I dress kind of with my boobs pushed up and pushed forward and my babs hanging out and, my booty shaking. And I get up there and I kind of sexual, if there's young boys in the front, I love kind of sexually harassing them because, of course, they don't expect that at all.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, woo, let's work it, boys. Come on, you want a piece of this. And I could go really raunchy or just tone it down. But, I mean, if somebody's heckling and then I slam them, for one thing, they look like a knobhead heckling me anyway because the audience pretty much gets on board with me.
Yeah.
And then you slam them down and that's it. Yeah.
Is the audience's radar up for that when you come out, do you think?
Ready for somebody to
what your response might be to that kind of thing?
Yeah, well, it's whatever the situation is. Mm-hmm. I mean, you kind of, people yell at the weirdest things and sometimes it's like, that doesn't even make any sense. And you just say that and you're like, does anybody agree with me? This person, what? Have another drink? Yay! But I really love having young boys up at the front because I'm just like, oh, look at you. Aren't you cute? You're like a little fetus. My nipples are hard.
Given that, what are some of the things that, given that this is a family show, of course,
right.
What are some of the things that people shout at you that you have had to address and how do you respond?
Oh, gosh. I can't. Well, I mean, being a female comedian, too, like, just that, immediately guys get their backs up against the wall, because just in the whole scheme of things, female comedians are not really well-respected.
I know a lot of people who, study comedy and are into comedy who don't like female comics at all.
I mean,
any of them, Sarah Silverman, Chelsea Handler.
And I've been told that people have come up to me afterwards and said, we normally don't like female comedians, but we like you. And I think it's because I think I cross racial, gender, geographical barriers, and... That's why I can work overseas so well. And overseas, they tend not to heckle because they're so freaked out by it. So right away, unless they're really, really drunk. But then once again, if they yell something out, the whole audience is like, I can't believe that he or she just said that to her because they're so like, oh, but then once I deal with it, they're like, okay, she can handle herself. They almost get like my protective over me until I prove myself that I don't need you people to, get on the defensive for me. I can handle this. I've been doing this a long time.
When you say overseas, what's some of your favorite cities to perform in?
Oh, I think Scotland is one of my favorites.
Really?
Glasgow.
Why so?
They're very...
They're very drunk, aren't they?
Well, yes, that's... but yes, they don't try to get into a conversation with a Glaswegian because they just spit all over you and they have no sense of space. They're right up in your like
close talking culture.
Yeah, great. Oh, thank you. I just got sprayed. Well, I think the farther English people tend to be super uptight, and especially with disability, they lose it. I've had people turn their chairs away, put their hands in their heads in their hands, and kind of like, we can't deal with this. But it's the socialization out there with the just in general dealing with people with disability. They're really behind the times with, you know, kind of, what do you call it, you know, people with disabilities just being kind of wide open and out and doing everything. Mm-hmm. They just can't get it around their heads that somebody like me, I've had people go, why are they making you do this? I'm like, really?
Like
yeah, being forced into.
Like you're being punished.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Some sort of human trafficking comedy thing.
You escaped from some carnival or something.
Yeah, I can't think of offhand, like, actual heckles other than the, just maybe something I said they tried to respond to and it just went flat or dead.
Is a good measure of your act talking specifically about this? I mean, do you come off it and talk about normal day-to-day experience in a Seinfeldian kind of way?
Not so much. I mean, with my stand-up, it's more jokey jokes, but it's still my perspective. And this one woman show is basically just all a series of my life experiences. So all about me, which I like.
Your favorite topic.
Yes, it is, as a matter of fact. I mean, I do talk about, you know, stuff like going to a spa and getting waxing done and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, but once again, it all comes down to my perspective. So, and because I may be small, but I'm very animated and I'm very I make the best and the biggest gestures possible when I'm on stage to try to fill up my stage. So I think people really like me moving, like they like to watch me move. Mm-hmm. And, you know, because I have, you know, short, gimpy arms and, you know, when I'm flailing about, it kind of adds to the, you know, to the bit.
It's kind of, it's an, almost literally an animated look, right?
Yeah, and I mean, I really, that was another stage I went from in comedy. I was just up there standing there doing my thing. And then when I realized that I started acting out bits and moving around, it really took the jokes to another level. Mm-hmm. And that was like this big transition, and it was quite liberating.
Right. You're listening to Our Metropolis. This is John Katzlamitis. Our guest this week is Tanya Lee Davis, who is the headliner at the Clarion in a show titled Little Comedian Big Laughs. Little Comedian Big Laughs. The show runs through the 31st of May down there. Who are some of the comics that you've been inspired by?
Well, growing up, and this is not going to come across well because Robin Williams, he's not known to be the best comedian in our industry because apparently he's stolen quite a bit of material. But
Robin Williams has?
Yeah.
I had not heard that about him.
Horrible reputation.
I have not heard that, really.
Sitting
Robin
in the back
Williams.
Of the comedy store Robin taking Williams. Down notes while comedians were on stage. Oh, I know people that, you know, have paid, he's paid their rent because he's gotten busted. I mean, it's out there. I'm not.
And just, this goes back to his early period?
Yeah.
Wow. I'd never heard that.
I still love him regardless.
Isn't that relatively widespread? Here's why I ask about this is because I've caught comics duplicating jokes before, and because I cover a lot of everything in Las Vegas and I go to a lot of comedy shows, and I've heard comics in town. I've heard comics in and out of town duplicate material, duplicate jokes. The most recent obvious example was Carlos Mencia, and you smile when you when you agree with me.
Oh yes,
and people have
Joe Rogan's attack on Carlos.
Joe Rogan, I happened to talk to him. Here's interesting. I talked to Joe Rogan at the UFC fight a couple weekends ago, and I had not talked to Joe Rogan before, but I mentioned to him that I'd written this previous piece of writing column about Carlos Mencia when we started getting into a fairly animated conversation about the Bill Cosby routine about his son playing football. I don't know if you know the routine. I think it's titled just football, where Bill Cosby goes through an entire
bits that he's nicked.
But yeah, it's a very, very long bit, and the payoff is that Bill Cosby teaches his son to play football. He follows him all the way through his career. When the kid finally scores a touchdown in the NFL, they turn the camera on him. He says, "Hi, Mom." Mencia tells this version of the same joke. But in this conversation I had with Mencia, he said this is more widespread than you might believe. Is that this kind of thing is relatively common? He says he's gotten a bad rap as somebody who does it, but I mean, you've been in the industry more than 20 years, and Robin Williams is famous.
Well, I mean, I think now there's a point where back in the day, people told more like jokes, and it was like the setup punch stuff we were talking about.
Traditional joke.
Yeah, traditional joke jokes.
Got into a bar.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And people, I mean, people tell those, and, you know, at some point somebody wrote that, but it just, you know, at this point it's anonymous, so, you know, people will regurgitate that over and over again. Well, now people, comedy's changed, and it's becoming more storytelling for some people, and I think, like, generic type jokes, or even, there's a lot of parallel thinking. So comics can come up with the same jokes and premises for jokes. Mm-hmm. But when it's a long story and it's, you're trying to sell it as a personal experience.
Exactly.
And then the payoff is exactly... That is some BS right mm-hmm. there. Like, I mean, I'm sorry. Don't try to justify that. Like,
yeah.
That's why I love doing what I do, because it is so blatant if you try to steal any of my stuff.
Your material, I would think, is so unique that you'd almost... I'd hate to say you'd almost have to be a PWD yourself to even reference it.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. And that's why, in my years, people go, oh, you know, you've got midget blinders on. That's all you talk about. And I go, you know what? It doesn't matter if I talk about goats for an hour. If my audience is entertained, mm-hmm. if they come out of there feeling they've learned something, they had a heck of a good time, who gives a crap what mm-hmm. I talk about? Like, I just think I have something new to bring to the table, and my audiences appreciate that. I got a whole new perspective, so why not? You know, just go on with it. And we have a voyeur sort of... sense in this day and age with all these reality shows. In a way, I've got my little reality show for 75 minutes of doing my one-woman show. People get to see my life, and they get to uh-huh. see me acting it out without TV screens or whatever. They get to see sort of live
right.
action.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel like I'm doing the right thing in my heart, and, you know, I go based on my response from my audience and stuff like that. I don't give a crap what the, you know, other comedians that don't have this lovely hook... No, I'm not some generic white guy that's got to come up with the same bits or make mm-hmm. up a nationality or whatever like Mencia.
I don't know that he made up the actual nationality, but he embraced the one that would exist in me.
Right. Well, he's Honduran, but apparently, you know, he goes plays off the whole
He's been on, fairly or otherwise, he's been on the receiving end of a lot of criticism. And as Joe Rogan mm-hmm. has really taken him to task, among others. What do you think of, as you were talking there and talking about being on stage, I was reminded of there was a fight card down at the Silverton a few months ago. Where it was Little People Brawlers, I think, was the title of it. So I think it's self-explanatory.
Right,
PWDs fighting each other.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you think of that form of entertainment? I mean, if this is endorsed and staged by a hotel casino in Las Vegas, all on the up and up, and you go in there and it's basically like a WWE event where mm-hmm. it's all people who are little people served as entertainers. What do you think of that?
Well, I grew up in the prairies of Manitoba, and I remember going to my grandparents' house, and my grandpa, WWF at the time,
uh-huh, uh-huh.
watching, you know, Jesse the Body Ventura in his colored tights. And then the next, you know, after the commercial break, there's a bunch of little people beating the crap out of each other. So, I mean, it's not like this is something new, but now they're mm-hmm. capitalizing on it. It's the same with, we had a porn convention in town mm-hmm. this week. This being the, midget porn stars. Those are, you know, wow, it's mm-hmm. capitalizing.
Or Chewy on with Chelsea lately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Chewy's basically a prop. I mean, mm-hmm. he just sits there. He's cute as a button, but I mean, if he was a comedian or something, you know, they could have. I mean, they forged their own sort of little niche. So I mean, you know, he's a sweet guy, but you know, I was like, oh, why doesn't she have at least a comedian little person? It doesn't have to be me, but I mean, then they could.
Yeah,
have
he doesn't really
like,
do much. Yeah, he just kind of nods. And I saw him at the Palms. He was at a show when Chelsea Handler was performing over at Caesars. Yeah, he happened to be walking through the Palms, going to another show in the lounge, and women were all over this guy. I mean, it was like a Menudo reunion or something. I mean, it was crazy, and it was Chewy.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is this guy, other than exist, has done nothing, really?
Right. Well, uh-huh. that's it. He's got, you know, it's like, I mean, look at the Rolling Stones. They're, 130 years old,
mm-hmm.
and yet women will be still throwing their panties at them. I mean, you've got that star status. It doesn't mm-hmm. matter what you can be ugly as sin and short or, you know, deformed, whatever. But if you got some star status, I mean, that's more for men. Women, not so much. That's why comedians mm-hmm. Female comedians apparently don't get as much action as the male comedians. Because, you know, men are worried about
you speak
getting,
frustratedly at this.
Yeah.
is it hard for you, Tanya Lee, to update your material? If you've got such a unique kind of home court of material, is it hard to get outside that and develop stuff? Or how does that process work?
Probably just because I'm lazy more than anything. I'm not that disciplined, unfortunately, to be perfectly honest.
Hard to generate material about being lazy, because then you have to work on it, right?
Exactly.
I have a joke about being lazy, but I'm too tired.
Yeah. I mean, I'm married, so that's always a good resource mm-hmm. for material because yeah. my husband makes me laugh. And
Marty, who's here today.
Yes, Marty is hysterical. He has Marty-isms. Mm-hmm. And so he's a, you know, it's that's in that sense, it's kind of updates itself.
That's handy.
Much to his dismay.
That's probably why you married him, huh?
Yes, yes.
And endless stream of material.
Yeah. You know, another, like, I've got a great group of friends. So, you know, I but I'm certainly not disciplined enough. I should be like my other, or some of my friends that are out there just do. Mm-hmm. And I know when I put my mind to it, like, even I've got so much new material in this new, in this one woman show. But I, you know, I had to sit down. I had to force myself to go somewhere other than my house without my computer and the television, mm-hmm. you know, or
where
internet.
Is that place? Where do you go? Where,
well,
where?
You, I went to a cafe. Uh-huh. I went to the Black Bear Cafe. Lovely people.
There's
plug.
A plug.
Drop cannon drones.
Everybody gets a free lunch at yeah. Black Bear Cafe.
Yeah, and, you know, we had a writing session there and got a lot of work done, but it's just, I really just, I got to put my nose to the grindstone. Mm-hmm. I've always been like that, just same with schoolwork and writing material. Mm-hmm. So,
have you coincidentally created a joke that was used by somebody else, getting back to that topic? Because I know that was one thing that people have said, that they've often used material and then all of a sudden they go back a few years and somebody else has used a version of the same joke. One example being the fence that would be built for immigrants. Who's going to build the fence?
Right.
A lot of versions of that mm-hmm. joke out there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So far, no, but I have two one-liners in my show that I will admittedly say that are not, like, I didn't write them. They're like what we call in the business stock lines. Mm-hmm. And one of them is kind of adult, so I won't, you know, go into too much detail, but it has to do with,
you know,
my
we've already
small
strayed
hands.
A few times in our
was
our,
that
we've already strayed a few times in our language
sorry,
here today,
no.
Tanya Lee.
It's
that's
hard,
all right. Too late now.
Anyway, I have small hands, so they're kind of useful in certain ways. and a lot of male comedians talk about that stuff all the time.
You're the best date ever.
Yeah, and exactly. So, but I've got the visual, and so I.
Oh wow!
For that particular,
even better.
Well. Yeah, so I kind of, and then there's another one that's, yeah. So, but they're just one-liners, and but they get quite a response, and it's only because I've got the visual aspect on my side that mm-hmm. I can act out the motion. And so, you know, yeah.
Yeah, we saw it last night. That, you know, it's not just, you know, people of all sizes use size in comedy. Mm-hmm. You know, Faison Love did some a few minutes last night with the Pauly Shore show,
right.
And he talked a lot about his, he's rather girthy.
Yeah,
and,
I haven't
said
seen
he was
him in
walking.
A while, but I heard he's... puffed out.
he has. He's like, and he's at the buffet, and he says, "Do you think this shirt makes me look fat?" And somebody said to him, "Oh, I don't think it's a shirt. Maybe it's all just trips to the buffet."
Yeah, it's the trays of food you got in front of you.
Right. All right, Tanya Lee. Well, we've reached the end of our set here.
Aww,
yeah.
Thank you, John.
Well, thanks for coming down.
My pleasure.
It's a pleasure to meet you in person. Finally, I'm going to check you out at the Clarion. What nights of what are the specifics?
Wednesday,
on the-
Thursday, Saturday, Sunday at 8 o'clock.
8 p.m. And tickets are?
You can go to wolftheaterlasvegas.com or to my website, TanyaLeeDavis.com. I'm also on Twitter.
Oh, wow.
I just became a Twitter person.
What's your Twitter page?
Tanya Lee Davis.
At Tanya Lee Davis?
Yep, at Tanya Lee.
Gotcha. Saying. That's all right. I mean, that's you know, given. I will, I'll come and see you down there. And
yes.
Thanks again for coming on down. For all of us at Our Metropolis, this is John Katzlamitis reminding you to stay tuned for Observations.
Thank you for joining us for Our Metropolis. Join us again next Tuesday at 6 p.m. for Our Metropolis.